Yes, it is. It's like hitting the lottery. That's right. Just got off the phone with my sponsor from the West Coast. I have two sponsors. I'm not recommending that for anybody, but that's what works for me. And he says to me, I heard the tape. The tape was great. They did it. We taped last week, and thanks to Larry and then some of the guys in here, the tape went around. And I go, which part did you like the best, Jerry? He says, well, I like when you introduce yourself from the West Side, and they said, nice. I said, did you hear anything else? He said, no, he turned it off after that. Thanks so much for the support. I really appreciate it. So much for my self-inflated ego. I got to tell you, last week was magical for me. I came up here and I had some notes. And do you realize the energy inside this room? Is this amazing inside here? It's like a revival going on inside here. And I didn't look at one note last week. There was bullet points and some stuff that my wife said I needed to write down. And I don't even know. I didn't look at it once. And it was a magical evening inside. I believe that the Holy Spirit took over in the Spirit of God and the Spirit of this fellowship. And we had a great first step meeting. And I went to prepare this week. And the same thing happened. You know, I just couldn't prepare. I just couldn't prepare. So I'm sitting over there and I'm looking over at the room, and there's like 100 people that I know in here and I love. And I thought where I was 9 years ago, where I was 8 years ago, on this very day, excuse me, 8 years ago, on this very day. And I realized, you know, it's so not about me and my message that it's all going to come out just perfect. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Johnny Mack text messaged me today. One sentence. Came to believe. I mean, you heard that I did a prayer before we started, so I've kind of, you know, alluded to what we're going to be talking about next week. I kind of finished the story. You know that I have a relationship with God. So let's just get that out of the way. I'm holding back. Believe me, I'm like a bridled steer right now. So you're not going to, you know, I'm alluding to the fact that my life has changed. But when we finally get to talk about the power that changed me from the inside out, the power that they talk about in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the power that they talk about in the 12 and 12, and they don't make bones about it. It's not like they're trying to hide it. It's not like they only mentioned it twice in the first 164 pages. They mentioned it 413 times, the message about God, Spirit of the Universe, the Big H Him, all these different ways to talk about God. So they're not trying to hide it. It's not like it's like Amway and they tell you, well, you buy some stuff of A and then you find out you got to buy a whole lot of stuff of B. They're letting you know from the first chapter that we have no power, that there is one that has power, and we're going to help you to find that power. Now, that was very exciting for me. Because I came in as one of the scenarios in step two out of the 12 and 12. I came in one of the scenarios of someone that already had religion and lost it. It's not like I didn't know God. I knew God. I grew up in a house, like I told you last week, that was half Jewish and half Italian. I had like double God. I had like two portions of guilt from both sides of the family. I had a Catholic guilt and Jewish guilt. And that's a lot of guilt, two guilts. I got to tell you, I'm humbled tonight that my first sponsor, Myron, that sponsored me for 7 years. Stuck with me and really, really put up with a lot of a young guy that came in when he was 25. How's this change going, Jimmy?
Pretty good.
And he put up with me for a lot of years. I can't say enough about getting a good sponsor. I can't say enough about getting a sponsor that cares about you through thick and thin. You know, when Myron sponsored me, it was almost like getting married, you know, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer. Man, we were in the deal and he didn't abandon me. And believe me, I was what you would call a handful. Self-will run riot. Came into the back room at this 12-step house on February of 94. 25 years old, already 1 year sober. Muscled out. Cobra, I had a Ford Mustang Cobra. Convertible, triple black. That's right, I have a ride. And I, you know, I don't think Myron knew. Myron had black hair when I met Myron. I don't think Myron knew exactly what he got himself into. But that man didn't quit. I want to tell you that I came in with all the answers. And I looked at Myron and I looked at guys like Myron and Maury and Ruth Rogers and all these legends in this 12-step house, and they had the same story. And week after week, I heard the same story. You know, after 5 years of hearing the same story, I thought to myself, I have to drink during the meetings to get through this stuff with these guys. And I became, you know, really anxious when I finally was able to come back and I heard Myron's story again, the same story, but now I had a month and I was with Mason. Man, that story sounded sweet. That same story of having a wife for 23 years and the same job for 23 years and the same home group for so many years, and that story sounded sweet to me. See, when you're out, it's so much harder to get back in. If you're here tonight, you're off the hook, as Paulie says. You understand? You have already came in the came to believe. You see, it's different now with the first step than it was back in the day. Back in the day, they used to have to sell this program because it wasn't very known. They used to have to say you needed to be powerless, and they needed to let you know that there was a program, and here was this program called A&A, or even before NA, of course, at A&A, and they would say, come to this meeting room, and people didn't know what it was, and then they saw the first step. Anyone that's in this room tonight, you already know the first step. It's not like you just showed up here on a Tuesday night, and you heard there was a good gig in town, and it was either I was going to see a movie, or I'm going to see a speaker in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're here tonight, you already realize you can't do it. I hope you realize you can't do it. So you've already came in the came to believe. See, a lot of us can come in, but not all of us can stay. So what we're going to be talking about over the next 10 weeks is the gift in knowing that you're not in control. Someone else is. How do we leash into that power? How do we come to believe? And how do we stay? And one day at a time, like some of you guys, Jimmy and Myron, Fred, bunch of you guys, if you don't die and you don't drink, all of a sudden you look over in the mirror and you're an old timer. And John. You know, all the people that I thought were so uncool when I came here are the people that I look over now and I say, yeah, you have exactly what I want. You have exactly what I want. You see, what I respect today is not what anyone drove in the parking lot with. I don't even, you know, this is all, my home group is over here, the West Side Men's Group, and I love these men over here. I love these men. I have no idea what half of them do for a living. No idea. Never asked them. I mean, in this group, not a lot of them do a lot of stuff for a living, but some of them work. And I have no idea what they do. You know, Spike's one of my best friends today. Let me tell you something. I have no idea what he drives. I don't know what type of car he owns. I know his fiance's first and last name. I know when his birthday is. I know when they're getting married. I know the name of his children. And I know his meeting schedule. You see, that's what juices me up today. You see, I came in here a non-believer. I came in here believing about me. You know, I truly believed, and I said it last week, but just for the people that weren't here last week, I truly believed that a good hair gel and a nice smile should get you through all situations. And I came in here believing that. And a pair of Cavariccis. You remember those, Mason, right? And a good pair of Cavariccis. I thought that was the triple threat right there. Hair gel, a good smile, and a pair of Cavariccis. What I learned, what I found out, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. See, I leashed onto a power that's inside these rooms that some people will want you not to talk about. They're a little worried that you're going to scare the newcomer out. You know, people told me before I started this step series in here, please be careful. Don't talk too much about what you believe in. You might scare the newcomer. Let me tell you something. I'm so glad that my current sponsor today and my previous sponsor that's in this room, they weren't afraid to talk to me about God. They never said to me, how do you feel about this thing? Or do you know that we're going to talk about a power that's going to change your life? And they just said what works for them. You know, it has transformed my life. I need to back up because came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity means that there was a time in our life that we were insane, right? There was a time in our life that we did insane things. Now, what I want to recommend is, and Myron used to say this to me, Steve, stop trying to create wreckage in your present. We're trying to clean up the wreckage of your past. And you're in there shoveling some coal right inside the room where we're at right now. So it's very hard to clean up the wreckage of your past if you're just shoveling away and creating wreckage in your present. You need to put down the shovel. And it doesn't happen overnight, let me tell you. It really doesn't happen overnight. But you need to come to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you, or for some of us, like Johnny and myself, for the first time, bring us to sanity. Because I remember from the age of 5 that I was never one of these guys that was an even-tempered, even-headed, everything is okay type of kid. I never was. When they were spinning, we used to have this thing, carousel thing, where you would spin all the kids in one direction, spin all the kids in their own direction. I wanted to go in the opposite direction. I don't know where that comes from. It just seemed like to me if you spun it in the other direction when the kids were on it, they would fly off, and they did. Now that wasn't learned. I didn't have that learned behavior. That was a DNA trace that came in down through me. So I wasn't even keeled from the very beginning. So returning me to sanity means before the embryo, means before that I was here. It means a new creation. Listen, I truly believe in a new creation. I truly believe in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous where it says we were reborn. That we have been given a new way of life. That the old will be transformed into the new. That we won't even look like the old people. That if people come that are from your past and they hear you speak now, they'll think you're putting on an act. Do you know when people visit me here in South Florida from my fraternity, they are waiting to see me take the waiter where we're at the restaurant and just floor the guy for like bringing me the wrong soup. They know that I'm about to come out. They have been with me before AA. They know that I'm about to say some nasty, dirty joke about a woman or a minority or punch the waiter or punch the maitre d'. They know that's about to come out. And I'm sitting at dinner and I'm having a great time and they just can't believe it. Because the old has been transformed into new. Guy said last night, it might have been Kenny. that I don't even have a lot of the old ideas I came in with. They have been exchanged for new ideas. But that didn't happen for me. You know, one thing that I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hear it a lot, is that I'm trying to work on my defects of character. I'm trying to work on patience today. Well, how does that look like? How do you work on patience today? How is it that you now have come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and now you are going to work on your defective character? I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for 7 years, and Myron will tell you, and Owen will tell you. You know, one of the people that asked me to speak here witnessed me have a fist fight in a room of 250 men and headbutt another guy inside Alcoholics Anonymous because he was speaking while the speaker was speaking. And I thought it was very well within my right to headbutt that guy. I mean, it was our sponsor speaking, wasn't it, Owen? And I thought that guy was highly disrespectful. And when I went over to him in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I said to him, listen, the guy's speaking. Why don't you keep it quiet? And he said to me to do whatever I did, and I just, bing, I hit him with my head, right in his head. Because I had come to AA, but I didn't come to believe. You see, I came into AA, but I didn't come to believe. You can stay sober your entire life. Your entire life. And nobody wants what you have. I mean, I'm going to tell you something inside this room. There's some legends in here. I'm looking around the room right now. I see some legends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want what those guys have. But not because they have time. I like their lives because they came and they stayed and they came to believe. I also know some guys that I saw that were hanging out in here beforehand that had a long time sobriety, and I don't want anything that they have. You know, one of the guys, I said to them, hey, you coming into the meeting? And he said to me, I had already been to a meeting today. What does that mean, you've already been to a meeting today? What did you check it off the list? I mean, I want it all. I want to have the whole pie. I want, if there's 150 people showing up for a meeting, I want to find out why. I'm not just going to come and just check it off on a list. I did that program already. I did the stay sober 7 years, check it off, have a shot of sake, and then almost die program. I want the big picture program. You know, a lot of you guys in here know that this room is very special to me. My very close friends are in this room that I started out with that I love so much. They're both here tonight. The three of them are here tonight. We were all in a halfway house together 8 years ago around the corner from here. And one Sunday morning when I was, after I had relapsed, I had 7 years. And after I had relapsed, John Greenfeld, also a member of our home group, asked me to speak, came over to the halfway house and said, Steve, would you like to speak on a Sunday morning at 11 a.m.? I was sober like 7 months. Mason and Anthony and Eddie and me and Sandra, my wife, we came over here to this room. I was just back. I couldn't believe that the Lord had allowed me to come back, and I couldn't believe that anyone would want to hear anything that I had to say. I was 34 years sober, and I was just coming back, and I just lost everything. I was living in a halfway house, like I told you, on a little mattress. It really wasn't even a mattress. It was like a mattress that wanted to be a mattress. I would have to do a lot of work to become a mattress. You got to fix those mattresses, Jimmy, if you don't mind. That's the type of mattresses I was laying on, and my wife came from our house in Hollywood, and you know, we have a mattress. You know, we have two mattresses. But she kicked me out of that big bed, and I was on a, you know, like a mattress. And probably Mason had a car. I don't know how he got here. He always had a car, and up until recently. And he probably drove us over here, and I spoke from the podium, and Mason and Eddie and Anthony, this is what they said to me, and I'll never forget. And the reason I'm bringing it up is this. They said, Steve, anytime you speak, I'll be there. I'm going to tell you something. If you're in a halfway house today, or you're in a treatment center, or you're newly sober, or you're just coming back, the people that are around you now, they could be the most important people in your life. We went around the country and spoke. We started new meetings. Almost every single time I spoke, they were there. That's it. Is this an unbelievable way of life? One thing in AA, and I know we can't do amens in here, but I wish we had a code word in here so that when a person's done speaking something you really agree on, you could just shout it out like, bet. Yeah, bet, man, yeah. Talk about it, bet. That's one good thing in church. We got amen, so you know when you did a good thing. Give me a scotch. I know DJ likes that one. So I'm 25. I just come in AA. I get down here to Florida from Minneapolis. And I'm staying with my grandfather and living with my grandfather and my grandmother. And I tell them I'm in AA. And they don't believe me. I said, I'm a year sober, Grandpa. I don't believe you. I am 1 year sober. I'm 25, Grandpa. And I need to get to a meeting tonight. Remember, Myron? He waited outside the 12-step house in his car while I was in the back room, and then came to the counter and asked the guy what's going on inside this house. He knew I was getting high in here somewhere. That's the damage I did to my family. My 77-year-old grandfather was at the counter and wants to know what's going on in here. I tell you, God is amazing. I asked that man, Myron, to be my sponsor, and about 2 years later, we were visiting his mom. I'm not from down here. I'm from New York. Went to treatment in Minnesota, came down here. And we were in the building where his mom lives, and he was taking me to visit his mom and dad. And when we went up to the building to see his mom and dad, I realized that I had recognized the building we were in. And I started to freak out, and I ran down the hall, and I looked in this one window, and Martin said, what are you doing? And I said, this is where my great-grandmother used to, it had her apartment. So back when I was a little kid and I was playing around in that building, that Myron lived there with his parents, 25 years later, he becomes my sponsor. Is that an amazing story? That's a very cool story. I was a brat then, he says. Okay, no heckling from the crowd, please. This is being taped. So how do you get from a guy that doesn't believe, how do you get from a guy that only believes in three things, Cavaricci's, white teeth and hair gel, to a guy that's speaking at the podium and he wants to pray to God first? How do you get there? Well, in my life, it had to be crushed. I had to be crushed. You know, because that old guy that was driving around in the convertible with an attitude and headbutting people in meetings is not the guy that Owen asked come to speak tonight. That guy wasn't asked to speak at meetings like this. That guy was asked a lot of times by Myron to keep it down and keep it quiet. A lot of times he said, please, that's not the way we act in Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, we have a code inside Alcoholics Anonymous. A long time ago, it was absolute honesty and an absolute purity and absolute unselfishness and absolute love. And oh, you know what he told me one time? He said, and you were absolutely doing none of them. See, I thought that as long as I wasn't drinking and drugging, that I was following the code of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's just the very, very tip. You know, coming in here and settling for the not drinking is like going to a buffet. And you get up to the buffet and you grab your plate and you grab your fork and your spoon and your knife and your napkin, and there's this incredible buffet. And at the end of the buffet, there's lobster and there's a guy in a white suit and he's cutting prime rib and pork tenderloin and salmon. And you go to the front of the line and you grab a crouton And you're like, look at the crouton I have. I'm so glad I'm sober today. Well, at least I'm sober. Listen, if I'm going to go through a couple weeks, well, at least I'm sober. And how'd you do today? I'm sober today. If that's all it is, I'm not sticking around. I want the whole buffet. I want the everything that's promised to us. A whole life. A whole new life. I want it all. And I want to tell you something. You can have that. All you have to do is let go of the old life. All you have to do is come in and say, hi, I'm Kevin. Take my life. You see, when people asked me to sponsor them today, I said to them, you don't want me to be your sponsor. You don't want me to be your sponsor because what I would like to do in your life is be your life manager, which means I would like you to leave your life at the door. That's not very popular now because people have jobs and cars and girls and season tickets and softball games and tennis practice and chorus and all stuff that I didn't have when I came in. I was on a 2-inch mattress. And Mason was driving us around when I wasn't walking with Eddie after his car was repossessed the first week we were in halfway house. I was grateful when he would cook a dinner. I didn't have bocce practice. I didn't have any of that stuff. I had nothing, zero. When I came home from a day of work and Eddie had cooked some pasta, I thought, oh, pasta. This is fantastic. You know what I had? I had a humiliating gratitude. Don't over underestimate a humiliating gratitude. There's not a lot of it these days. You know, if you can't leave your life at the door, if you can't come and say, I come to believe and I'm leaving my life at the door. Who wants your life anyway? You come in and you're like, I want this part of my life. How you doing with that? How's that working for you? How's that working for you? You can't manage potatoes and you want to manage your life. Leave it at the door. Get yourself a life manager. Find out that there is a power greater than you that can restore you to sanity. Listen, at the very least, believe that it's not you running the show. At the very least, I walk into my sponsor's office when I was working at the meatpacking plant in Minneapolis. I was 25 years old. I had just went to 4 years of college. I was the youngest president of my fraternity has ever seen. I was on the Student Leaders Council where people come to you and they ask you your opinion on campus. I took the fraternity from about 25 members to like over 60 when I was the president. I went to the conclave. Which is the big convention of the fraternity where Ronald Reagan appeared. And I was the representative for my fraternity. 6 months later, I'm in a closet inside my fraternity house and I don't come out for an entire year. No, it's a different coming out of the closet, but... Not that there's anything wrong with that. And you know, I really felt I had it going on. I really felt I had some wherewithal. I really thought that I, you know, could manage parts of my life. And I walk into my sponsor's office. I was 3 days sober. I just had been readmitted back to the Progress Valley Treatment Center where there's 24 guys. I had been readmitted because I had been thrown out a year earlier for fist fighting. I know that is very hard to believe. And I walk into my sponsor's office and I say to him, Jerry, I think I got this thing now. I feel good. I'm coming into my own. I'm coming into my fourth day of sobriety. And there's people going out all over the halfway house. And I'm not afraid of it. Doesn't even faze me. I'm not even thinking about drinking. I love that line. It's like, isn't that the best line? I'm not even thinking. Listen, I'm not going to the meeting tonight, but let me tell you something. I'm not even thinking about drinking. As a matter of fact, drinking is the last thing on my mind. I don't know how it works, but I've been sober 3 weeks and I haven't thought about drinking. You will be the last to know, Steve. Drinking doesn't show up and let you know when it's going to come on you. You see, all God has to do is take you, and this is His hand of grace, and you're situated in the middle of it, and you're not thinking about drinking because you're actually following a program, and then all you need to do is stop following that program, and all He needs to do is go like this. And once you're out of that grace, you're going to be thinking about drinking. You're going to be thinking about drinking, and you're going to be the last to know. And how do you know I know that? Because when I started thinking about drinking, I was the last to know. My wife, Myra, and everyone else knew. Me, it was a total shock to me when I started thinking about drinking. I had just been making the statement 6 months before when Myron kept saying, how come you're not coming to meeting, Steve? How come you're not coming to meeting, Steve? How come you're not coming to meeting, Steve? I said, listen, Myron, I'm 6 years sober. I'm not even thinking about drinking. As a matter of fact, drinking is the last thing on my mind. But as soon as it became the first thing on my mind, I was drinking. You will be the last to know. So I walk into the office. I need to wrap this up because I got to tell you a funny story. I walk into the office and I say, Jerry, listen, I got this thing. I'm coming up into my fourth day of sobriety. He says, sit down, Steve. I'm going to tell you a story about the disease of alcoholism. The disease of alcoholism is not a flat-footed cop that walks around the street of New York with a donut in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other. The disease of alcoholism is like a secret service agent that if you speak one language, he speaks five. That knows how to use every weapon in the arsenal. That walks around in $1,000 suits and goes unnoticed. And if you have any respect for your sobriety, you better have that much more respect for the disease of alcoholism. And bam, just like that, I knew I was in for a different type of ride this time. And he said, let me tell you something, Steve. If you don't come into each day of sobriety and ask in a power greater than yourself to keep you sober, you will not stay sober. I said, Jerry, you know how I feel about that kind of stuff. I grew up Catholic and I grew up in, you know, I'm not. He said, listen, if I invited you over my house for Thanksgiving dinner and you sat at the table and you didn't say please and you grabbed the food and you ate it like a gavone and you started throwing it down your throat and you didn't say please and then you got up from the table and you didn't even say anything to my wife and I and you didn't say thank you, we would never invite you over here again. So why do you think you should have one day in God's world without saying please in the morning and thank you at night? Do you think you can do that, Steve? Do you think you can come? Do you think you could stay long enough so you can come to believe? Do you think you can lay it down in the morning regardless of what you believe? Hey, Steve. Yes, Jerry. How's your life going for you? Not so good, Jerry. Well, do you think that maybe someone else can run your life? Okay, Jerry. Hey, Steve. Yes? Do you think that maybe a power greater than yourself needs to come in and manage your life? But I don't know what that is. You don't need to know what that is. That's not step two. You just need to come and stay long enough that He does the work. But you can't come to believe if you come in with your entire set of ideas and all your notions and your cell phone on and your texting and your girlfriends and your boyfriends and your cars and your ideas and your OTB and all that nonsense. You can't come in here and expect to come to believe if you're taking your entire baggage with you. You need to leave your luggage at the door. Some of us are walking in here with all our baggage. There's not enough room for all of us inside this room with all your baggage. You need to leave it at the door. Man, Jerry, I was like, listen, I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about, baggage and luggage. All I know is I'm in a treatment center and I'm working in a meatpacking plant in the middle of winter for $4.25 an hour. I'm 25 years old. There's not an English-speaking person in the rest of the entire plant. I'm learning Mexican on an hourly basis. And I know that I'm not getting my life, and I know that I'm not living up to my potential. And maybe there's something about this thing coming to believe. Tonight is my wife's birthday. My wife is sitting right over there. Okay, it's not about her. Bring it back here. Eight years ago was the week of 9/11. The reason I know that is my wife was in the country of Colombia for her birthday. Her mom and her share the same birthday. She was in the country of Colombia. 9/11 was happening this week. And I was getting high in the basement of my house, in the den of destruction, and trying to kill myself. And my wife called over today from Colombia, and I wanted to say to her, happy birthday. I wanted to say to her, I love you. I wanted to say to her that I wasn't going to get high, and I couldn't. Now mind you, 8 months before, I had picked up my 7-year medallion. Mason had handed it to me. And 8 months later, today, September 1st, I couldn't stay sober. When September 11 happened, I didn't even think it was happening. I thought I was watching some type of video. My parents called me from New York and they said to me, how you doing? You know, Jill died in the crash, Kara's best friend, and I didn't even get it. I was too busy trying to kill myself. Half our friends from New York, and you know, every one of us, every single one of us from the Northeast knows someone that died in that crash. To me, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was watching it on TV, and it went from here to here, because I had stuff in my hand and stuff going down my throat and stuff in my belly, and I didn't understand it. You know, this time when I came in January 3rd, 2002, and I called Myron from the Fort Lauderdale Hospital on January 2nd, 2002, the third floor, the psychiatric wing, I said, I had enough. I had enough. My wife had served me with a restraining order, and she went with my parents to get divorce papers. I had signed over the business, the house, and I lost all our finances during my relapse. I was in the Fort Lauderdale Hospital, broke, with no place to go. A couple months before, when I was in that Fort Lauderdale Hospital on the second floor, which is for chemical dependency, not insanity, they said to me, we recommend you go to a halfway house. And I said to them, a halfway house? I'm sorry. I'm not going to a halfway house. My car is in the parking lot. I'm driving home after this stay. 4 months later, after two stays in the Fort Lauderdale Hospital and then being on the psychiatric floor, they said to me, we recommend you go to a halfway house. Now, I knew I had no car, no money, no wallet, no income, no hope. And my wife had told the director of the house, Jeff Weinstein, she said, as long as he doesn't call me and bother me, I'll pay for the first couple weeks of that halfway house. And I went to that halfway house. And that was the step, the first step of me coming to believe. If you think, and my wife, I said to my wife tonight, listen, sweetheart, we'll do anything you want tonight. I can ask Spike to do the meeting. We can do anything you want. It's your birthday. It's your night. You know what my wife said to me tonight? There is no place in the world that I would rather be than by your side in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where you're speaking. Let me finish off by saying this. You don't get from there in pink slippers and restraining order to here with you mapping it out. It just doesn't work. You don't get to run that ship. But if you come, and then you come to believe, and even if you're not there tonight, but you just know that you're not doing such a great job, and maybe you're going to let somebody else do it, you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams. Thanks for letting me share.
those who helped us set up the meeting and everything. And once again,